You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Daniolo, and this evening my guest is the one and only James Taylor. Well, not the one and only, but certainly one of the only singer-songwriters named James Taylor. Sorry, James, I'm just having a little fun with your name. But Mr. Taylor will be joining me in studio right after this first song called Living in the Dark here on the Auto D Show from the Fervor Records catalog and the Pistoleros.
When your friends say they're worried, you better slow down in a hurry or you might not get another word. They tell you you're failing, say just too like wailing, but you know nothing about this world. Say you're not living who you are.
Listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was Living in the Dark from the Pistoleros from Fervor Records catalog here on the Auto D Show, which is brought to you tonight in part by my good friends at Fervor Records and also by TheRecordingArtist.com, where every Wednesday evening I record bands live online while you watch. You can even participate via live chat if you want, so to learn more, visit TheRecordingArtist.com, and be sure to watch our companion show on Amazon Prime called The Recording Artist. It's kind of awesome. And so is tonight's guest, as a matter of fact. So let's turn on his mic and welcome Mr. James Taylor to the show. Hey, James, thanks for coming in.
Oh, lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm sorry I'm playing so much fun with your name, but to have two singer-songwriters by the names of James Taylor, that's kind of wild.
It's good. No, I'm glad you clarified. I don't want to disappoint a great many people tuning in.
So. You couldn't disappoint. But listen, I want to ask you about that, though, because your parents obviously knew the famous singer-songwriter James Taylor. And when you were born, they didn't know you would be a singer-songwriter. But how did they come about James for you?
Well, actually, I think I was supposed to be named William originally. I think that was the plan. And my dad just had a stroke of inspiration. I don't know if Fire and Rain was playing in the registry office or something. But he came and announced it to my mum. And I'm sure there was an argument of some kind.
Hun, let's make a switch.
Yeah, you know, I just had a little, let's go with James for a while. And, you know, it's, I was like... If Elvis had been playing, things might be very different, you know.
That's funny.
But I feel like it's big shoes to fill. I feel like it's inspiring me for greater things, hopefully.
Well, that's kind of cool. This is off the cuff, but do you recall the first time that you came across James Taylor? Did you go, oh my gosh, he's got my name? Or did it happen when you were so young, you don't recall that at all?
I think it was probably because all of my teachers in school, they would use every opportunity. I know you've seen Fire and Rain, James, but have you seen your homework? You know, things like that. So I would usually just be, okay, what is this? What are they talking
wasn't
about?
The first one to do that? To
I had to get the joke, so I had to hear it, you know. So, but, you know, all things considered, I feel like I did quite well for a namesake, really. I mean, he's got a lot of very good songs, you know, really quite a fan. So
a lot of great songs. And you know what? So do you. You are in a very, very cool group called Chrome Rhino.
Thank you.
And I love the band. Known you guys for a little while. You were on the Recording Artist show.
A lot of fun.
And you will be on the television show, too, when we edit that episode. But the band, I remember thinking... Chrome Rhino, what does that mean? And I thought, well, certainly when I need a PR photo, I can Google Chrome Rhino and they'll pop up. There can't be a lot of those. And I discovered that Chrome Rhinos are a thing. There are Chrome Rhino everythings.
And that was news to us as well. Honestly, I mean, I have no idea where that other trend has came from, but I'm happy to take full credit for all of it. So
how did you guys come about the name?
So Travis had been writing a large amount of electronic, sort of intertwined with pop, intertwined with rock songs, and he was organizing all of them. And we were going
Travis
through...
Travis is a member of the...
Yes, sorry. Travis plays bass and sings and songwrites for Chrome Rhino. So the genesis of it really began with his songs. And we were trying to think, you know, how do we portray this? We had a lot of names we were kind of batting around, trying to just... You know, it could have been Golden Elephant, you know, for all we knew. But the one we ended up with was Chrome Rhino because it sounded, you know, rhinos are just kind of like one of those fun animals that look like they should be a dinosaur, but they're not, you know. And it's you know, when they're chrome, you're dipped in chrome, it's got to be better, right? I mean, it's got
to be better, all shiny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's still big enough to knock everybody over.
Hopefully, that's the goal at least.
That's pretty wild. You know, and with your accent, I just have to ask you, what part of Arizona are you from?
I'm from the lesser-known northern part called Stoke-on-Trent, where it's very, very, very northeast Arizona to the point that it's...
But really, then, obviously, you weren't born in the States, so tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, so I was born in England. My family's been across the pond a few times. My two elder sisters were actually born in America, but I'm the English child. I was the one who was born in England.
Are you the youngest?
I am, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I was born in Huntington and grew up in Stoke-on-Trent, which is not really famous for a lot, but the captain of the Titanic was from there.
Really? So, the captain of the Titanic?
The more you know, yeah. So... I'm joining a lineage, hopefully. Apparently Slash went to school in Stoke-on-Trent for a short period, and then Lemmy from Motorhead is from that sort of area as well.
You can't beat that. That's
great. I know.
Company.
So there's a bit of a pedigree, hopefully.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, you mentioned your sisters were born in the States. Where were your folks originally from?
Both my parents are English, but my eldest sister was born in Minnesota, and then the other sister was born in Georgia.
What was going on that the family was hopping around?
So
can you say?
Well, yeah. I have to, you know, keep it brief. But my dad, he would work with various construction companies and things like that. It would move him across the states and back and forth across the pond. And
what kind
like.
Of construction?
So he would work with concrete mixers and things like that.
A lot of transport, like roadways or just
Usually, yeah, he would just like sell the actual equipment itself. Okay. And then, yeah, people would take them and do various things with them. But yeah, there's a lot of call for that in different parts. So he would just kind of go where the business was.
Well, how about music in your life? Was it happening at the house? Were your mom and dad musicians and singers?
Or? They're not musicians. I'm sure my dad likes to think of himself as a singer, but no, they are big fans of music, so it's probably my earliest exposure to them would be the songs they would play.
A lot of
Cat Stevens, a lot of Beatles. There'd be probably some Neil Young in there, and those would probably be the main ones we'd be listening to.
How old were you when you moved from England?
14.
Okay, so let me ask you then, as a young teen, what was it like? How did people feel about the Beatles there? Are you kind of like, they're passé and we're past that? Or is it still like a real pride?
Yeah, it's
half and half.
I know in England at the time, it was like a band you were always aware of. You're just like, oh yeah, of course, Beatles are great. Okay, the foundation on which we all rest. But you know, it was sort of through the 90s, you know, trance and electronic music was the big thing at the time. So there was a lot of that. Oasis had kind of brought Beatles back into the forefront a little bit. But yeah, I hadn't really started rediscovering them until I actually came out to America. I met a lot of people in school who were just enamored with the White Album, and that was one album my parents hadn't really listened to very much. So I had really grown up on mostly, you know, Please Please Me, with the Beatles
stuff.
very early stuff. I went about as far as Revolver maybe, but yeah, the later stuff was still quite unknown to me. So they were just, you know, like, I think Me and My Monkey was one of the ones
one
I was hearing.
One of my all-time favorite tracks.
And I was just like, what is this? Where did this come from?
It's like there's a fire bell in the chorus, you know, like at a fire.
Right.
The whole time. It's like, I love that. I've never heard a recording, in my mind, that captures more energy. They're screaming and bouncing off the walls. I've never heard anything like it. Every time I play it, I feel like I just had a cup of coffee and ran around the house.
It's a jolt of energy for sure. And
like nothing else.
They had the you know, I was used to them singing, you know, From Me to You, where it's like very, very, like very sing-songy, very polite vocals. And they come with Me and My Monkey, and it's like they're shredding their voices.
Yeah.
You know, it made me see them in a new light for sure. And then from that, you know, you get the bridge over into Pink Floyd and Queen and ZZ Top and all of that.
Well, what did you start, or should I say, how did you start in music? What's the first instrument you picked up?
Well, I mean, ignoring the forays into recorder a brief tenure with the tenor saxophone. I had kind of always kind of messed around a little bit with guitar. I never really kind of took it seriously. I think it was when I found other friends who played guitar and just been like, oh, that's how you play that. That's how you do that. They would play songs I would recognize, and it was a very miraculous thing. Just like, what? How did you do that? You know, so it was almost like an arms race with me and my friends. It's like, who can play that riff first? Who can play that song first? So that was the big catalyst to me, like, playing more often and taking it a bit more seriously and trying to do more with it.
Did you play guitar in England before you were 14, or did that kind of happen after you came to the States?
I played it, but it was probably, I think, the only song I've managed to play at that point was the theme from James Bond. That was about you know, that's the riff right there. I wish I had a nicer guitar to have played it on, but that was about the long and short of it in England. But
I remember Christmas morning going downstairs, and I think I was 16, and found I had a guitar, electric guitar, in the amp, and we put it in the basement at 6 a.m. and figured out how to play Smoke on the Water.
Oh, nice!
You know, and 5 minutes into learning it, which is about all it takes, even if you don't know what you're doing, you know. I hear my father's voice screaming, you know, turn that damn thing off. It's like, well, you gave it to us.
Rite of passage.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Smoke on the Water was probably the one for us. Yeah, you know.
Right. That's just one of those riffs you just got to, you know, pound your fist
to. Either of your sisters into music? Or?
They're fans of music. I know, you know, my eldest sister would be a big fan of, you know, going out to dance. They're much more rhythmic than I am. You know, they actually can dance in that sense. But they would always like play music. I would hear a lot of them. They would be listening to more modern music at the time when I was kind of going really into the 60s and 70s. So there wasn't a lot of crossover, but I'd say towards the end of high school, I think there were a lot of modern bands that we were all like the Strokes was a big touch point for all of us, where we all seemed to like them. Coldplay and Top Loader, and they were all sort of contemporary bands that we all seemed to like. So we bonded a bit over that, at least.
Cool. Well, right now, is the whole family scattered about the country?
More or less, actually, yeah. One sister's in Richmond, another sister is in Birmingham, England.
Okay.
Yeah,
your mom and dad across the pond, or are they
in
over
Florida?
Here
yeah, Florida. So okay. Yeah.
All right, awesome. Yeah. So you got all the nice warm weather places covered, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're seeking them out.
So now that you've been out in Arizona, you've been out here for how long?
Oh, about 5-6 years, I suppose. Okay. Now, yeah.
All right. So when you got here, had you been in a band before?
Yeah, me and Travis had been playing, did a lot of bar circuits, and played a lot of, you know, rock shows. It would be sort of for a place that needed, you know, an evening of music, so we would do, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, you know, whatever it turned into.
That's the way clubs were when I was coming up.
I think it was a good way to learn, really.
Yeah,
I think it's a very unforgiving audience.
Yeah, you're like Wednesday through Saturday from 8 to 2,
right?
And you had to know a lot of songs.
Yeah, they challenged you like to your face. One of the earliest stories I remember us doing is we kind of were playing for this party, and we knew maybe a handful of songs together between us. And we always remember one person yelled out, "Play some Marshall Tucker," and we were like, "Well, we don't know anything by them, you know." So we started playing what we did, and then we finished the song, and it was silence. And we heard the same guy say, "That wasn't no Marshall Tucker," and that's, we all just sunk our heads a little bit and just kind of slunk off after that. But it was a good learning experience.
You can't know everything. But, you know, the thing I think is interesting is when you get to work like that, especially when you're first kind of learning how to be on stage and entertain and perform with an audience, you get, that's 40 hours in a week, where today it seems like most of these clubs put a band on for 45 minutes, then another band for 45 minutes, and then another band. And you get that once or twice a month. It takes a band a summer to get the time we'd have in a week on a gig back in the day.
Definitely.
So I think that whole learning your stage presence and dealing with problems on stage, how to deal with the audience, you don't get a lot of learning in the new environment.
I think that's like you say, problems is a huge thing as well, because during that period of time, if you're playing for 4 or 5 hours, something will go wrong. A string will break. Something will get spilled on a guitar, a mic or a speaker will fall over or catch fire, all things that have happened to us at one point or another.
So where else have you lived in the States?
Me personally, either Virginia or in Arizona.
Okay. And what brought you to Arizona?
So we actually, Travis and I came out just in search of doing some technical schools, doing some just additional education. And we kind of established ourselves out here. We had some friends already in the area, so we'd been able to visit them and liked it. But when we came out here, we'd kind of brought all our savings with us, and we'd got ourselves in this apartment, and we thought, you know, this is as much savings as we'll ever have. You know, this is really a pivotal point for us, where we could either, you know, just go down this road of academia, or we could, you know, just give it a go and see what happens. And we kind of just rolled the dice and didn't look back, so yeah.
So is Chrome Rhino the first band you put together in Arizona?
We were a part of lots of other bands
for
at the time, kind of working with other people's projects, but Chrome Rhino was the first one where it was like, this one's ours. This is, you know, the one we're you know, actively taking a role in and trying to drive it forward.
Okay, we're going to play some music by the band, but before I do, can you how would you describe the music of Chrome Rhino?
Shiny and dangerous is the phrase we keep repeating to people. So hopefully,
now, but couch that in genres that people are familiar with.
So we're going for a very big rock sound with some nice colorful harmonies and melodies, and it's colorful but heavy.
And it seems to me there's a bit of comedy.
There's a bit of a nod and a wink with some of it. I think we're trying to surf that line between, you know,
having
outright
fun,
parody, and just
saying
fun
something
with it
and having fun, you know. And I think that from the personalities of the characters in the group, you have a lot to draw from to balance those things and keep you guys kind of not going out of bounds.
Right.
Particular in any particular way, because when you finally do get out of bounds, well, two people are laughing about it. Two people are like, no, that's a little too far. Yeah. So you'll always, you kind of an interesting balance for that. So let's play a cut. And the first one I'd like to play is I Love You, But I Know You're a Robot.
Very nice.
So tell me, and in fact, the reason why I want to play this is the first video I saw online of you guys.
Oh, wow.
And when it came out, and I was like, we have to have them on our show. We got to go meet these guys. We have to have these guys on the show. Because to me, it was funny without trying to be funny. It was just funny. It had a very light side that made it very easy to receive. You know what I mean?
Well, good. That was definitely the goal.
So tell me a little bit about the song, and then we'll play.
So this was kind of a genesis of a bit of a Mark Bolan phase I was going through for the verses. We kind of started off just with a drum beat, just kind of playing the opening chords that you'll hear. Really, I think it kind of came into its own when Travis was able to bring this chorus into it. And then years later, when we were to play that same song with Jared had these extra ideas of how to kind of add this extra section in.
And Jared is...
Jared plays the keys and sings as
correct.
Well.
Who else is in the band?
We also have Jay on drums as well, who sings but doesn't like to. So we'll be working on that.
Pretty much everybody kind of sings on and off, don't they?
We all have the capability, but on the first album, it's just the three of us singing, and Jay will be working on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So who's singing this song?
That one is Travis singing lead, and then we all kind of join in various points for the harmonies.
And this particular song, I guess it is available to the public, right? It's on all the streaming platforms.
It is. It's on all the places, yeah. Or you could go to chromerhinomusic.com. We have links for all of them as well.
Cool. Well, let's check it out. I'll let you get a drink of water, and we're going to listen to I Love You, But I Know You're a Robot from Chrome Rhino here on the Otto D Show. Check it out.
Stand.
listening to Otto D coming at you live.
And that was I Love You, But I Know You're a Robot from Chrome Rhino here on the Otto D Show, where my guest is singer-songwriter James Taylor, who also plays guitar in Chrome Rhino.
Hello.
And that's a great little song. Very cute.
Thank you.
You talk about the comedy of it, the coming back down to the little, simple little keyboard and then the robot tones, you know, and lyrically, topically, you know, the comedy that's in it's cool.
No, we got to use a lot of our favorite sci-fi references in that one, and get as many little inside jokes as we could fit in there, really. We had a lot of fun writing that one.
Well, and the record sounds really, really good. So tell me about where you did this and how it came about.
So, yeah, we did that at Flying Blanket Recording with Bob Hogue.
Another Bob Hogue record.
I know.
Bob's got his act together, I'm telling you. His records sound great.
Yeah, oh, yeah. He was able to take that to another level for us, because we had some arrangements, and he made some changes that we were very happy with, and then just the whole approach and everything of recording that, it was a lot of fun, and it really gave us a renewed sort of appreciation for songwriting, really. That it kind of changed how we thought about writing a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Kind of built a bit more drama into them, a bit more tension.
Well, I noticed that song was 440, so was Bob giving you the eyebrows on that? That's almost too long.
There were lots of moments like that, yeah. We have a few songs where he was just like, yeah,
it's like, boys,
a long one, yeah.
If you can't say 3 minutes, it's, you know.
I think it was even longer before Bob actually had his say on that one as well. So, yeah, I'm not sure what it would have been had he not intervened.
Yeah, that sounds great. That's great. And we'll listen to some other ones. But now, is it evenly split between the three primary singers, or is there one prominent singer? Does Travis sing most of the tunes, or how does that break down?
On the album, it's actually fairly evenly split. Travis is singing three, Jared sings three, I sing two, so I'm the George of that equation for this album.
And is it kind of, I wrote this, so here's how it goes, and it's, I'm going to sing it because it's my song?
Actually, usually, with this song, there was sometimes, you know, I've brought this to the table, what can we add to this? Originally, when we kind of began this, we had a good grouping of songs, so I Love You But I Know You're a Robot was one. Zombie Vision was another. We had a lot of them just kind of ready, and we brought Jared on board, and just in the process of playing them, you know, so for example, how he ended that song with the single keyboard note ended up writing or giving the granules that would become the next song on the album Swamp Daddy. On that, from that, Travis just added a bass line, and then it was like, hey, can you play something a little funky up in this key, you know, so it just kind of organically grew out of that. But there were definitely a handful of songs that was like, hey, I've brought this to the table. So we have one in their Phlebotomy Suite, where Jared had an idea.
One more time.
The full title, Phlebotomy Suite Part 4, : Why Don't You Give Me Your Blood, if you're not into the whole brevity thing, you know. So we that was the kind of the genesis of that was Jared's chords that he had, and he had this melody piece, and we were all playing that along, and then just somewhere out of the ether, and you know, we came up with this extra part that came in. So we did really it felt very organic, just putting a lot of mixed pieces together and just kind of seeing how they worked. And
it's a 6-minute song, so we're not going to play it.
No, that one's a lot. That one's, we wanted to just make that,
unless
that
we're
was,
done
yeah,
talking,
most epic one. Yeah, there'll be so, like, no more talking after that.
But here's a piece of it, as you referred to. So who's singing on this one?
That's me, actually. Okay. Yeah, stretching out the baritone on that.
Let's
one.
Hear ya.
One day I woke up, nothing reflected me. I walked outside.
Phlebotomy Suite.
And the light
number 4. So, I mean, there's some comedy in that to me. I mean, to be honest, like when I listen to my records, I never intended to put comedy, but they make me laugh. Mm-hmm. When I crank them up and listen, I laugh when I hear them. And I think it's just because sometimes it's the drama you write in something emotionally that is kind of comical.
Definitely. Yeah, so, there was a lot of laughter while we were writing a lot of these songs. And rather than us trying to give each song a punchline or a sort of a gimmick, it's really just, you know, this would be kind of a fun kind of a place to explore for people and kind of put people in this different kind of environment.
And how do you go about how did you go about writing this album's worth of songs? Do you guys all live close together?
Was it
an in-person experience or online? Or
We had written it all and recorded it all sort of late 2019.
So just before the pandemic really...
Really, the timing, we were very fortunate in that regard. We had the whole thing recorded and tracked right around March 2020. So right as things were starting to lock down, we were just remotely talking to Bob as he was mixing it all. And so luckily...
Oh, he loved that. They can't come over. I can just do it by myself and send it to him. That's what I like to mix that.
Yeah, he might have preferred just kind of, being able to just kind of cut us down if necessary. Just, actually, I'm going to mute that. But no, it was a very easy mixing process. Usually it was just, two thumbs up all the time when they came in.
Very cool. And so... since you did get this together before the pandemic, then did you tend to come together in writing sessions, or did you guys work all of these up in rehearsals? Or
so in all of these, like writing these, it was usually just Jared coming over and we would just kind of sit down with our instruments and just kind of play around with them and see what we were happy with, really. A lot of songs just kind of just naturally grew out. We're like, okay, let's work on that one, let's see how that one goes. And we had, one or two, we were just like, okay, let's give this a tweak. But for the most part, at the end of the day, we'd be very happy with what we have, and we just kind of move on to the next.
And this wasn't your first studio experience, correct?
We had been, I've been able to record in a few studios, but I'd say it was usually a situation of just show up and play your part. We'll record it as you've played it. I think with Bob, it was an experience of there's another creative working with
us. First time you kind of had a producer.
Exactly. So we had other ideas in the mix as well that kind of inspired us as well, and it was just a very different experience. So mm-hmm. I'd count that very differently.
And so do you think that will impact your writing going forward?
I think so, yeah.
Knowing what you can do and what... all you have to do, because someone like Bob can take it from there across the finish line for you, they can show you the rest.
Well, right.
Sometimes.
And he gives you that objective standpoint as well, where it's just like, okay, I know this person understands rock music as well, and if this is what he's saying the song needs to do, that's we should try and do that more often. Let's try and bring people there.
Yeah, or at least try. That's the key.
Right.
You are the artist, you can be a prima donna and throw a fit and say no, But I mean, I think that you don't want to not take advantage of that expertise.
Well, right.
When it's in the room.
Definitely, yeah.
You know? So what happened with the band? The record was done. Did you have dates set up when the pandemic hit?
We did, yeah. Like, I'm sure that's a very common story. We had grand plans in mind, and then the pandemic just kind of shut them all down. So we did... there was a period of just like, oh, what do we do? What do we do? You know.
I told you we shouldn't have gone to Arizona. Put our savings into a rock band.
Exactly. Yeah, we should have went to New Zealand. But no, it's... It actually kind of... It changed the focus for sure. It kind of pushed us in. Within that limitation, it kind of gave us creative challenges as well. There were a lot of things that we weren't able to do, so we tried to focus on the things that we could. We did a lot of writing for sure. All our music videos and things like that we had planned to do didn't really pan out. So we reached out to a friend of ours, Garrett, who's living in Los Angeles, and luckily they were available, and luckily he had a team of people he could bring on board. So he brought Ben, and he brought the lead actress Amy for our video Zombie Vision that we mm-hmm. were working on, and that was something that's they great. Were able to do.
That's a great little video.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, we gave Garrett a few pointers, and we just said, this is kind of what we're thinking in terms of the vibe of the song. It was very much a feeling like of a John Carpenter movie we were trying to go for, the specifically They Live, but also just John Carpenter. Like, when he's doing a horror movie soundtrack, it's very persistent, very doom-laden. So we really wanted that.
Doom-laden.
Yeah.
That's a good name for a band, or maybe an album.
Oh, right, yeah.
Doom-laden.
Yeah, so someone should borrow that one. But, once we gave him those few touchstones, he kind of took that and kind of injected his creativity mm-hmm. and it turned into this.
And he brought you
really
these storyboards,
cool,
and then you said, "Oh, but our budget's only."
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I said, This is the champagne one, but let's do the beer budget.
Yeah, the video, as I recall it, budget doesn't really cross your mind. It doesn't look like you were trying to cut corners, but it does look like a late 80s kind of video.
Good. Okay, that's what we were hoping for. And yeah, I think he really dialed that in and made something kind of special out of that. And props to Amy as well, because we gave her no direction at all. It's feelings of paranoia, you know, just paranoia, just be paranoid.
Action. And so that's action.
Yeah, just roll with that. And she gave a great performance out of that elevates the song, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's really neat. And she was from LA as well.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Cool. I'm originally from, I'm not sure, but Garrett and Ben are actually from Virginia. Garrett went to the same college as us at James Madison University. Amy, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if she might be an LA native. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. So, the pandemic then, you guys were basically parked. When was your first show coming back out?
Oh, geez. I think we played, a show at Focal. My sense of time since starting it has been a little bit warped, but yeah, it feels like maybe only a few months ago. But mm-hmm. I just remember it being this very cathartic thing, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's probably other musicians who would agree. I think just so long of just, oh, I'd love to play a show, love to play loud. It's like I'm practicing right now, trying not to irritate my neighbors. It'd be great to actually just play as loud as I want to. So actually being able to crank my amp past 3 or 4 was a very freeing sort of feeling, and
isn't
I think
that funny. Yeah. Something you take for granted just changes your life when you get to do it again.
Right. If anything, I'd say it's given us a renewed sort of excitement about it as well.
And I think that's happened in a lot of ways. I think that's also happened between the music going public and the bands. The shows I've been to since, the people are so happy to be there.
Right.
One show, there were all these tech problems right up to the moment of the show, and people were dancing to the pre-show music. They didn't care.
Right.
Just happy to be. You guys have a problem? That's fine. Have your problem. Right. We haven't seen a band have a problem in a long time.
Right. You know? Very true.
So it was so forgiving. And the same thing after I did a show, and people came up to us afterwards, and first they tell you did a great show because, you know, well, either you did or it's just what they say.
Hopefully, yeah.
But beyond that, it was just like, the next remark is, it's just so nice to see live music again is what they say to you.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's so nice to play. So it's like, you get to agree with them that now we're participating again too.
Right.
You forget that. You think the band gets to go play, but the people get to see you. There is a participation that's been missing too.
Yeah, it's and very that's, freeing.
That's a big part of the community. And speaking of community, I've always thought that this music community, especially the indie rock thing through the Tempe, Phoenix area, is unlike most. It's really, really deep, and it's everybody's really tight. There's so many people, partly that share different bands, but also are influenced by and huge fans of all of the other bands.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine now that everyone's creeping back out, it's almost like, I have the sense that everyone's coming back out of caves all like with their wounded sores, and everyone cares for everybody. Like, are you guys okay? Are you guys okay? And it's even tighter right now than it was, and it was already a tight community.
Definitely. That's been my experience as well. I think we've met some of the kindest people just working with bands here and the promoters and venues. It's been an unusually kind and welcoming scene for sure. And then, right after the pandemic, there's also just, and how have you been? I haven't seen you since so long. And it's very much lots of people trying to help people out whenever they can. And it's a very nice
thing. It's like right now, the little things don't matter as much.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, glad to have you here. Oh, we forgot something. Oh, don't worry. We're going to start 15 minutes late. That's okay. Glad to have you here. I think people are just so joyful that things are starting to happen, you know.
Definitely.
So we'll see if it can stay that way. Obviously,
I hope
now,
it lasts. Yeah.
You know, California is closing some things down, and we'll see where this all goes.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
Pandemic 2.0. Hopefully that's not going to come around the corner.
That's
well, you know, you mentioned Zombie Vision, and I remember that video, and I may have misspoke. That might be the one that I was thinking of that I had seen, because as soon as you mentioned that title, I saw the whole video. Love both of those songs, but let's go to Zombie Vision and play that. Do I have that one in here? Let's see. I do have that one in here. So do you want to, is there anything else you wanted to tell me about this one before we spin it?
That's one of my favorite solos in this song, I'd say, is what Jared is playing. Travis sings lead on this one. And yeah, this was a lot of fun. We originally wrote this a lot slower. Originally, it was a bit of a dirge as it began. So very glad we sped it up. I feel like it's a lot more fun to listen to now. Have a lot more fun playing it.
Cool. Let's check it out. This is Zombie Vision from Chrome Rhino here on the Auto D Show. And that was Zombie Vision from Chrome Rhino here on the Auto D Show, where my guest this evening is singer-songwriter, guitarist, James Taylor for the band Chrome Rhino. And that's a pretty wild song right there.
I'm a big fan of it, that one.
It's massive in energy. When you guys play that live, is there just one synth?
Actually, Jared's doing the two synth on this one. Going. Yeah.
He's no got background his tracks. And he's doing it all.
No background tracks. Yeah, we try it. Cool. That's something we haven't used, and you know, until we start doing some, you know, Bob O'Reilly type, you know, orchestral things, I imagine we're going to try and to not use anything like that.
Well, now let me ask you an odd question. You know, playing in clubs and the whole scene, you do play in front of lots of different audiences. Mm-hmm. With this music, it's like I see a techno crowd. I can see that sometimes you're the only band like you on the bill if there's two or three bands.
Right.
So you might see a few surprise faces, or you might see people who are really, really into you that weren't into the other guys. So what's some of the craziest stuff that's ever happened for you from the stage?
Well, it's strange you should mention, we've been the only rock band on a solely hip-hop
really?
Concert. And so, yeah, I don't think many people were into us on that one, but it was a great poster.
After three songs, you go, thank you, and you look at the promoter, and why did you book us?
Oh, yeah, that was, I treasure that poster, though. I feel like we're the only ones really kind of smiling on our poster. So, we did have a particularly rough audience once for a St. Patrick's Day concert. It was a very cozy sort of setting. I'd say there wasn't any real distance between us and the crowd, and one man I think had some sort of bucket on his head collecting tips, and he approached someone asking them for tips for the band, who I suppose must have misheard him and taken some offense to what he said. And
was he getting tips for you?
Yeah, I we never saw that money, but he was asking people for tips for the band.
But he was then spending on beer.
Yeah, who knows? we never really found out what that money went towards. But someone swung at him, and he fell backwards into our speaker stand.
No.
Our speaker stand fell onto a table where our friend was sitting. Injured his foot.
Ow.
and from then it all erupted very quickly, like about a song into our set, and you always try and keep the show going, right? Just like keep playing,
it's not really.
Yeah, in this situation it's like, no, I see someone's bleeding over there, we should probably stop, you know, we should
sure
everyone's okay. But yeah, it's like you were saying, you know, it's one of those lesson to take along, you know, when you can learn to read the crowd and say, okay, this looks like it might turn a certain way. Let's try and be on our guard.
Yeah, I remember when I was 17, I think we were playing in a club in Streeterville, Illinois, Streeter, Illinois is what it's called, and the nightclub had just been bought by a 23-year-old. Who was a member of a bike gang. I can't remember. I don't think it was the Hells Angels over in Streeter, Illinois at the time. But we didn't know anything about this. He had just bought it. And it was called the Deuce Stumble Inn. Okay. And we came up, and we were in a band that was like Journey. We had satin clothes we were going to put on. We had our light show we were going to put up, which we made out of coffee cans.
And nice.
Hung on 2x4 stands, you know. And as we're pulling up, there's nothing but motorcycles out in front of the place. And I'm saying to the guys, we're not putting on those outfits today. Keep your jeans and t-shirts on, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, we get in there, and one of the guys who's a friend of the owner comes in with his motorcycle into the bar and is spinning it around on what would have been called a dance floor. And he's coming within inches of our mic lines that are running on the floor and our light cables. And we're like, okay, somebody's going to die during this song. Let's just see what happens, you know. And so that's going on, and then luckily that nothing happened, but they asked us to play Cocaine, and we didn't know the song at the time, you know. And they were like, no, that's the only song they wanted to hear. Everybody wanted to hear it. So we just huddled up and said, okay, play it. Just start playing it. I'll sing it. I don't know any of the words. I'm just going to mumble, and then I'll just say Cocaine. And they loved it. They screamed. We had to play the song like 8 times through the evening, you know. But you learn what to do.
Right.
You're in the spot, you know, and you just have to do what you have to do to make the show go.
Definitely. There's a handful of songs like that where it's just like, okay, we'll play this to pacify them. And for a certain drunk crowd, you know,
sometimes that's the only goal.
Yeah, exactly. They want to dance to the song they know. A Sympathy for the Devil used to be always that would get, you know, if we had a drunken rowdy group, or usually we don't ever really play Nirvana, but whenever we did play Nirvana with that bar band, it would that would usually be, you know, we could gauge the intensity of them by that point. It's like if they were calling out for Nirvana, it's like, okay, we're probably not going to be playing any of the blues songs after this one, guys. We should probably, you know, keep the intensity up.
But isn't that a cool thing to be able to do? Because ultimately, if you're doing a concert of your material, they're there to hear you.
Right.
If you're opening for another act, they're there to wait through you to get to the opening act, so they're still going to listen to you.
Right.
But if you're playing in a club, that they just want entertainment. Well, now if you ever want to get that gig back, you got to make the people happy. It's all about them.
Exactly.
It's a very different job.
Right.
Than doing a concert.
Definitely. And we would always try and mix our own music in there. And usually we would end up playing the song a lot harder, a lot faster than we're used to playing it. And it's part of that cool thing when you can kind of tell that they're in the mood to listen to some rock music, but you know they don't want to hear it the original. It just you kind of sense it, and you're just like, okay, we've got to probably play this one a little bit harder. I'm going to turn the gain up a little bit on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always fun. We would always would have some people come up, oh, that was that one song, who did that? And they were like, oh, actually that was one of our songs. Yeah, so that would be the nice moment when we'd get that cool out of it.
Well, you know what, we are coming up on the end of our time, so let me ask you a question. How can people find you or get a hold of you guys? Do you have a website?
We do. So chromerhinomusic.com is our big professional website. We're also on all of the social media typical places. I can't imagine there's many Chrome Rhinos. Just do a search for one of them.
And it's not spelled funny, right?
No, it's spelled like you might imagine it. And but if you'd like to see us live, we're playing August 7th at Last Exit Live. We'll be playing with Daphne and the Glitches as well as Radio Blonde.
Great.
And we're planning a lot of surprises. I'll say it at that. A few little special things that we're trying to go in there, because the next week at the Rebel Lounge we'll be playing with some of our favorite bands. We're playing with Wives, with Paper Foxes, Harper and the Moths as well. So yeah, they're all bands that we've loved and admired for a long time. We're thrilled to be playing that show, and we're going to be doing something very different for that show as well. So two very different flavors we'll be putting out within two weeks there.
Very, very cool. So the first one is
August 7th. Yeah, and then August 14th at the Rebel Lounge.
Okay, that sounds awesome. So everybody check those guys out. And James, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It has been a lot of fun. So take care of yourself. And I'm going to see you probably at the Last Exit Live show if I don't see you at both, because I want to see all those bands. I mean, I got to see Radio Blonde again. I've only seen them in the studio.
Oh, it's always a good show with them. Yeah.
So again, thanks for coming in, James. We'll talk
thanks
to you soon.
Much.
And thank you all for listening to the Auto D Show here this evening. While the Suns are probably getting beat, I don't know if they're getting beat or winning, but I'm going to catch the last few minutes of Game 6. Go Suns, hopefully. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. I will not be here. I'm going to be out of town, but we'll be back afterwards. So we'll see you then. Take care.